Walt Dipchula, Road Rage, we're back. So my man Bishop Ramon's all over this. He's the leader of the black helicopter people.
Okay, well, maybe
he writes in capital letters, Ramona, it is true. There are loads, again, capital letters, of documented evidence of the genetically modified ticks that is shunned by the mainstream media. That's from Bishop. I'm sort of thinking, I sort of buy this. I do.
Okay.
I sort of buy this. Okay. I'm buying this. All of a sudden, we have this alpha gal tick that is all over America all of a sudden. From somewhere, and this tick prevents you from eating meat.
Okay, is Bill Gates a vegan or a vegetarian or something?
I don't know what he is.
Get rid of the people that eat meat or don't want people to eat meat, so he's gonna.
No, I doubt it.
Put out this tick.
Again, just to be clear, we're not saying that Gates did this.
No,
we didn't make any statement that said Bill Gates engineered a tick to do. We said that's what the black helicopter people are saying.
Yeah, that's what's
and
out there.
Like Bishop is saying right now.
Yes.
And so the suggestion among the black helicopter people is that Gates is promoting lab-grown beef, and that works nicely with a tick that forces people off of meat. That's the suggestion.
What?
So, I got a lot of texters, Ramona.
I got a lot of texters
who do believe this. A lot who do believe
it. If you want someone to eat. Now, there's lots of meat substitutes. Hang on, I got to choke.
What?
There's lots of meat substitutes, right?
Galen,
why do you have
Galen's to... not buying it. Galen's not buying it, but most of the other texters are, Ramona. It's getting worse, Ramona. Text again, I didn't say this. Text says he doesn't eat red meat, but he eats babies.
Oh, no.
Well, you know, look, there's a lot of suggestion about all the Hollywood types. Just that.
We've had our horribleness for the day.
we have. So this little deal, Ramona, has exploded out of nowhere on the text line. Exploded.
Okay, but what I was trying to say.
All I know is you don't want to be bitten by this alpha gal tick. I know that because, man, I don't want to be unable to eat meat for a year. I mean, I'm fine. You people want to be vegetarians, that's fine with me. I don't care. But I don't want forced vegetarianism.
Are they saying they have people that have been bitten by the tick?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, okay. I know of people who have been bitten by it.
Now, now, where is this tick?
Most places. Okay, it's spread out, like, overnight.
Okay, let's get back to that. You know people that have been bitten by the tick?
Yes.
And have they had to stop eating meat?
Can't eat meat. Makes them violently ill.
Okay. Are they going to somewhere to get some fake meat?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that yet.
Do you know that?
I don't know. I don't know.
Because if you like meat, okay, you would want to know where the meat substitute is if something happens and you can't eat meat.
Texture said 100% dropping boxes of ticks on farms. The guy from WHO admitted on camera 10 years ago.
The guy from who? From what?
World Health Organization. Oh. WHO? Not the band. Ramona's thinking the band.
I was thinking Doctor Who.
Oh, by the way, Texas says it's only red meat. Yeah, well, what other meat is there?
That's your favorite.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big chicken person, too. You know what? It's funny because, I've always loved barbecue pork. You know, I love barbecue pork. Like, any sort of barbecue pork. I don't even care. I'm Mr. Sauce, so I love all the sauces. Give it to me all. I love barbecue pork injected into my veins. But I've never been a big fan of, like, pork roast or pork chops. But like, recently, I'm starting to get a taste for it. It's like I'm starting to...
For pork chops?
Yeah, I'm starting to crave, like, pork. I don't know what's happening to me. Maybe I'm anticipating Alpha Gal. No, I don't know.
Okay, so this is... Okay, okay. So let's say we get bit by the tick.
I don't know. You know what? I didn't even research why it's called Alpha Gal. Oh, you want to talk?
I want to talk just for a second.
Okay, yeah, you can talk.
You get 4 hours. I'm like... So If you get bit by the stick, you can eat pork and chicken and things like that?
Maybe.
Oh.
It's a maybe.
I mean.
It's a maybe.
I'd survive.
Yeah, I guess. Hey, let me tell you about Turner's Jewelers, where you could do a lot more than survive, especially if you're in the doghouse. Hey, they say when you find your true love, you'll know it. Celebrate the strength of your love with show-stopping bridal jewelry from Turner's Jewelers. Turner's is a family-owned jeweler with over 65 years of expertise and a legacy of trust in the upstate. Explore their curated collection of necklaces, bracelets, earrings, and rings, each one ready to shine on your beautiful bride. You'll find stunning fresh jewelry every time you visit. There are new pieces for every season, engagement rings, and wedding bands should be significant to your story. Custom designed jewelry to wow on the big day and every day thereafter. Work with their expert in-house jewelers to design a one-of-a-kind piece of art right now. And men, don't feel left out. Turner's has a stunning selection of pre-owned and new watches, the perfect accessory for every day or a night out. Designer jewelry from Turner's is sure to turn heads and start conversations. Find stunning bridal jewelry to gift, wear, or surprise your loved one with. The only thing more beautiful than our bridal jewelry is the bride herself. Jewelry for keeps to reflect a relationship for keeps. When you know, you know. And Turner's is the place to be. Nobody does I do like we do. Let Turner's Jewelers be the something blue on your wedding day. Browse online anytime at turnersjewelers.com or visit the store in the Applewood Shopping Center in Seneca for personal expert service. Turner's Jewelers, where Southern hospitality meets diamond know-how. And there's a good chance you meet producer Ramona there because she lives there.
I do have to go there.
See, I knew it. With good reason. You always have to go there. And with good reason. All right, let's get back to the quarterbacks.
All right. Are we done with Brendan Sorsby?
Yeah. So number 12 is been excommunicated from college football. So I'm going to assume number 11 is still going to play, but we'll find out.
Yeah. All right. 11 is C.J. Carr at Notre Dame.
Yeah, I have him much lower, I think, than the national people. I mean, again, he's the favorite to win the Heisman Trophy, or the co-favorite to win the Heisman Trophy, which I don't quite get, given that he lost both superstar running backs, both drafted in round one. I do think the receiving corps is going to be pretty good. The offensive line is always going to be good. I like Carr. I like Carr right from the get-go. I defended Carr in the Minshew sweepstakes. I liked Carr. I liked what I had seen of Carr before he ever took over last year, and I thought he really played well right from the start of the year. I thought he played well in the road game at Miami. And so I like him, but I think liking him and moving him to the Heisman Trophy front runner is just a massive leap in logic. I don't see that. I mean, I think he has a chance to be a really good college quarterback and maybe a pro, but I don't view him right now as a round one talent. That's not where I'm at with CJ Carr. Now, maybe he gets there this year, but I'm not there yet. I'm not wowed by his traits. I mean, they don't jump off the page at me. I don't watch CJ Carr and think, man, nobody else can make that throw. right. And so I think we've gone a little overboard with the CJ Carr thing. Again, I like him, but I think 11 seems to me about right for where he should be. So I'm satisfied with my Carr at 11. Now, I don't know who I have 10.
Sagapolitelli.
Okay. And now I'm more satisfied because I think Sagapolitelli is better. I think Sagapolitelli, first of all, you know, he doesn't have an elite arm, but he has more than enough arm to make all the throws a college quarterback needs to make. He is remarkably accurate. He throws the ball on time. He has insane touch. He can layer the ball. He's just gifted. He's just a gifted passer of the football, not just a thrower. He's a passer. And I think he takes another step forward. Now, he lost his top receiver, but I think they found a pretty good replacement. And obviously you have a new head coach there, but I was shocked that Sagapolitelli stayed at Cal. Shocked. I thought for sure all the big names have come calling for him. I thought there was no way Cal could retain him. Cal obviously has an interest in winning some football games that they retain Sagapolitelli. I don't know that 10 is high enough, quite honestly. I think Sagapolitelli is really good. Really good. And I think he's going to make Cal competitive in the ACC, 3,000 miles away.
Okay. Number nine is Drew Mestemaker.
Yeah, okay. I want to make this clear on 6-2-2026. He's too low. My concern about him was he's going to Oklahoma State and he's following his coach and blah, blah, blah. And Oklahoma State has been just a disastrous program of late under Mike Gundy, the worst in the Big 12, just an absolute embarrassment, a defense that's just criminal. I mean, just disgraceful. I mean, that's what they've fallen to under Gundy. Quite honestly, I think he got in trouble a number of years ago with his players over race-related issues, and I think he did and said all the wrong things. And I don't know if players quit on him after that. I sort of think that's what happened because that program just spiraled down. I think that Mestemaker, who do I have at eight?
Eight, you have Trinidad Chambliss.
Okay. Again, this is an elite group, all right? From 40 on up, it's an elite group. It's just a really talented quarterback class. But I'm going to say something about Mestemaker. And I wrote this on Twitter a couple weeks ago. I think Mestemaker is going to round one. I don't know that Chambliss is, but I think Mestemaker is. I think he's going to round one. And there are some issues with him. Okay, there are issues, some issues with all these guys. All right. One of the issues with Mestemaker is he has a really sort of three-quarter delivery, a little Philip Rivers-like. He gets some balls deflected, which shouldn't happen for a guy who's 6'4". He has some passing lane issues, in other words. But, and here's the but, I think that he gets the ball out of his hands quicker than anybody in college football and with great accuracy. Now, you would think that throwing motion would cause some balls to sail. Cam Ward has a little bit of that throwing motion and certainly did earlier in his career. But when you look at Mestemaker, his release and his ability to get the ball out of his hands and throw with accuracy, I think might be the singular best trait of any quarterback in this season and in this draft. Therefore, I think he's too low. If I was going to invest in somebody, look, winning the Heisman Trophy generally takes team wins. I don't know about the team win thing because I don't know how you're going to overcome that defense. I know they've added pieces, but can they fix all that in 1 year? I mean, that defense was truly horrific. But I'm telling you right now, I think Mestemaker is going in round one. And I think he has really unique ability. And I think he has a couple of strengths that are better than anybody else's in this draft. I don't think anybody in this draft has as quick a release as Mestemaker. He sees the field, he distributes the ball, he throws with accuracy, the ball comes out, bang, bang. I mean, it's out of his hands in a second. And he has enough arm talent to be able to make all the throws a college quarterback or an NFL quarterback needs to make. I'm really high on Mestemaker. You know, when I first watched him, I had some concerns, and I still do have some of those concerns, the concerns about delivery point, etc. But I think the other elements in his arsenal just trump that. They just trump that. Man, he's a guy that, quite honestly, I sort of dreamed about having here at Clemson, and I would have taken him in a heartbeat. But, again, he was going to follow his coach. That seems like that was the plan all along. So I'm not surprised by any of that, or nor where he wound up. I don't know, maybe a little surprised. I thought somebody would come calling with big money for Mestemaker, but again, he's a part of this super elite quarterback group, and I think he's a big part of it. Let me tell you about Lake Kiwi Auto Group. Hey, they're kicking off the giant summer spectacular sale. hey, listen, Lake Huron Ford, Lake Huron Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram are having a kicking off summer sale. So if you've been thinking about upgrading that ride before the travel and vacation season hits full speed, this is the moment to jump. Lake Huron Ford and Lake Huron Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram are kicking off summer with the biggest discounts you're going to see all year. I'm talking up to $15,000 off brand new trucks. Yes, 15 grand. That's not a typo. That's a friggin' game changer. If you've had your eye on a new F-150 or maybe a Ram, Lake Kiwi has a whole lineup ready to go. And if you're on the fence, test drive them both. Do a side-by-side. Figure out which one fits your summer plans best. And it's not just new. They've got a ton of low-mileage, one-owner, pre-owned trucks, too. Over 600 vehicles on the lot, all clearance price, all ready for delivery. And here's the kicker. Buy now, you get zero payments for 90 days, plus attractive financing. That's how you start your summer right. So get there now before the vehicle you want gets sold. With discounts this big, these vehicles are not going to sit around. Head to Lake Kiwi Ford, to Lake Kiwi Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram on Highway 123 between Seneca and Clemson. Shop online anytime at LakeKiwiAutoGroup.com. Whether you go, whether you call, tell them I sent you, it's how it works. You want in to the program. Again, our lines have been jammed for weeks now, but you want in, you can get in right now. And this is your last chance to talk to me this week. 40 minutes. Quick break. Bengal John. John, how are you? Good to have you as always.
Thank you, Walt. Thank you for getting me in. I hope you enjoy whatever you're doing. Give me, text me or touch base with me later on this evening if you would, if you get an opportunity. I got something to tell you off air. Walt, okay. I've just had enough. I've had enough. I don't support Lane Kiffin. I'm not a Lane Kiffin fan, but his record speaks for itself at Alabama and you Florida Atlantic and Ole Miss. I mean, the guy's a good coach. Whether he's a troller, whether he's whatever, it doesn't matter to me. I could really care less. I'm looking forward to a season at LSU, and I'm looking forward to see what he can do down there and turn the program around.
You know, on the good coach thing, John, before you get to your punchline, let me say this. I think we almost have to divide that up. Like, for example, I think he's a really bright offensive mind, and I think he's really good in preparing his team during the week for their game and installing a dynamic offense, and I think his offenses are aggressive and all that stuff. The dilemma comes is I have never seen a dumber game day coach than Lane Kiffin. He can't stay out of his own way. He's just a tinkerer by nature, and he does ridiculous things, and he just can't stop himself. And I thought at some point he'd grow out of that, but he didn't. If you go watch the Oklahoma game from last year, go watch the film from Oklahoma for the Oklahoma game, you will be horrified at the result. The Ole Miss should have won that game by 40. And the only reason they didn't is because he made just ridiculous decision after ridiculous decision. Why? I don't know.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it was the bourbon. Maybe it was the scotch. I don't know. But now he's quit drinking, or so he says, and he's turned his life around. And maybe he's got a different outlook. I surely hope so. But Walt, it seems to me that nobody is realizing the amount of talent that LSU has acquired. Everybody wants to put this under the rug and go, well, LSU's not proven, and LSU, we don't know about LSU, and I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about everybody. Well, let me say this. 60% of the people that came to LSU out of the portal, out of the 40 people that he got, 40 players that he got, 60% of those players were starters somewhere else, and they had success, and they were proven.
All right, let me stop you again for a second. I'm just going to interject before I forget all your points. All right, so I'll let you continue. But who had the top portal class in the country last year?
LSU.
Right. What did it amount to on the field?
Well, that's completely Brian Kelly.
Okay.
That's completely Brian Kelly and the coaching staff. And I don't care what anybody says. Those players did not want to play for Brian Kelly. Those players did not buy into that system. Those players, 90% of them, were ready to go somewhere else at the end of the season. And they fired that coach. So guess what? I mean, that's proof. That's proof on paper. And LSU is suffering because of it. to the tune of about $70,000, well, as we speak right
but
now.
But it's not proof, because Brian Kelly's been a really good football coach and has won a lot of games. And that class was ranked, but well, that class was ranked the number one portal class, and it didn't play out that way. So all I'm saying to you is, you know, yes, you're bringing in talent, but at some point, talent has to be converted to the field. And not only that, but it's the timing of when the talent becomes a factor on the field. I mean, you don't think like a reasonable person could look at LSU and the talent they brought in and trying to evaluate the upcoming season and say, I have some concerns about them early with integrating so many new players that by game five or game six, they could be rolling, but I'm a little concerned about who they are.
I don't think it's going to take that long.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to take that long. And here's the other thing too. Do you remember the season before last year, when LSU was very dominant on offense with Garrett Nussmeier?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden Garrett Nussmeier gets hurt and the productivity level goes from what, 60% to less than 30% on offense?
Yeah.
I mean, and you have said it so many times, Walt, that the quarterback is the head of the snake. Well, guess what? Given that statement, if Garrett Nussmeier had been healthy this year with the talent that we had, probably is a 9-win season, maybe even 10.
Mm, yeah.
And now you put Lane Kiffin in there offensively, and I told you 2 weeks ago before I went on my trip, I'm concerned about the defense in the secondary. That is the biggest concern. I think they've shored up the defensive line. Offensively, I don't think there's a question mark. I truly don't think there's a question mark. If Leavitt can do what Leavitt did as a freshman at Arizona State, look out. The points are going to be, LSU will average 38 to 45 points a game.
That's a lot of points.
And I don't think you can disagree with that.
That's a lot of points. That's a lot of points. I don't see that. I don't think that's going to happen year one under Kiffin. I think there's too much newness. I think there are a lot of questions. I think Leavitt himself is a big question. So, I just don't see it, John. I we'll find out. I think LSU's going to be very beatable early in the year. Whether they win those games or not, I think they're going to be beatable. And then I think at some point, it will start to click. That's assuming that Leavitt is right and focused and all those things. But I have questions about him, and I think rightfully so. As somebody who watched every game he played, I have questions about him. I don't know what version you're getting, and until I know which version you're getting, I'm still gonna have questions. Maybe you'll get the more mature version of the guy from 2 years ago. Maybe you will.
You got him at 13, Walt, and I'm gonna ask you a question.
Yeah.
If he comes out blazing saddles,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you can move up.
I mean, just blazing saddles, and this offense. Do you not think this team can make a run at a national championship?
Yes, I think if Sam Leavitt is a more mature version of the guy I saw 2 years ago, yes, I do. It's still a sort of a major if for me at this point. John, you want to speak to me? You have to call me tomorrow night. I could be available tonight though. But hey, John, I got to run.
Right,
good
you.
Talk to you. Thank you. Jason in Columbia. Jason, how are you? On the Pratt Injury Lawyers phone line. Thank you for getting in, Jason.
Oh, John is fired up, man. He's ready for football
he
season.
Is. Like that's it. What happens. You get a little closer. You know what happens, Jason? All off season with fans of every fan base are like this. Blah, blah, I don't know. We suck, blah, blah, blah. And then the closer we get, the wins start to mount, Jason. By the time we get there, we're 11-1 at worst, Walt. I know it.
Yeah, I don't know if Clemson fans will be that way this year, but after the last couple, I'm like you. I have no idea what to expect. I mean, that last year, all the returning production that amounted to nothing and wound up with 9 draft picks has got me totally confused.
That's crazy. That's
but
crazy.
No.
Yep.
Yeah. Hey, I thought I'd tell you a story that'll lighten.
And by the way, the draft picks, the draft picks, at least in theory, proved the notion that Clemson should have been a national title competitor. The problem is, the draft picks themselves. That's the real dilemma. It was those guys who let the coaching staff down.
Well, it's amazing. Somebody read off the stat. It was either Sam or Faxon this morning read off the stat about how Miles Garrett was he was double teamed like 56% of the time or something last year, and he still had 23 sacks. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, wait a minute. Someone needed to tell Peter Woods that just because you're double teamed doesn't mean you just turn in zero production. Yeah,
that's
right.
That's right. It's like I've always said, Jason, on that front. You know, look, the great defensive tackles are always double teamed, and they still all make plays. Peter Woods just didn't make any plays. Now, look, he's going to go play besides a great defensive tackle, so he's not going to have to worry about being double-teamed. No one's going to think twice about him. So if he doesn't show up in Kansas City, you'll know the real truth.
Hey, I got a story. This will make you smile. One of my good buddies grew up in Charleston, and his dad was a lawyer, real quiet, preppy kind of guy, you know, very, very proper Southern gentleman. And one Sunday, he and his family are driving home from church. He said this is like the mid-80s. He's like 10 years old. And he and his brother and sister in the back seat, mom and dad in the front. And they see a man in Charleston beating up a woman. Well, dad immediately pulls over to the side of the road. And the mother just says something like, Robert, what are you doing? And he said his dad, swear to God, never said a word. Walked up and put a beating on this guy for about 3 minutes straight. The woman ran off. And he said he's still sitting there beating the guy in the middle of the street and just left him in a pile.
There you go.
Came, got back in the car, and said his mother didn't say a word. They were totally quiet. No one ever said anything about it on the way home. And then they all got out of the car and went their separate ways. But
that's too
Pops
funny,
had
man.
To teach a lesson that day.
That's
so,
exactly right.
There are some good men out there, but we might be losing them generation by generation, unfortunately. I tell you what, social media, Walt, I can't tell if it's...
Trust me, the people on that train were not the D-Day crowd.
No. And that's the thing. I don't know if it's just that we didn't know that there were so many dumb A's and just cowards among us before social media, and now we know it.
I think it's both.
Or did the social media help spur the growth of it?
Yeah, I think it's both. But we without question, we grow them now. There's no question. I mean, we create them in the lab now. Again, Jason, I don't know if you've seen the images, but it's truly one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen in my life. I mean, you've got people.
Well, it's like you said, I just don't know how you live with yourself. I mean, I had a buddy when I was in high school, a woman was being harassed by a couple of guys at the mall, and she asked him, would he walk her to his car? And he said, of course. Now, he's 17 years old. And once he escorted her to the car, they all of a sudden, you know, he's 17. He doesn't have a lot of street smarts. Right. These two guys jump him and beat the crap out of him. But you know what? I mean,
he still did the right thing.
He got the woman out of there.
He still did the right thing.
So, but. Well, Walt, I'm looking forward to this Knicks Spurs finals, man.
Let's go.
There's no hate watching. I'm just looking forward to seeing these guys do their thing. And I hope you're right. I hope the Knicks and Cat come out ahead. But I just hope for a great series.
Yeah, again, I think my only concern with him would be foul trouble guarding Wembanyama. Now, he's not real quick in terms of lateral foot movement. And he has a penchant for getting in foul trouble that has been really his biggest dilemma since he's been with the Knicks, and really his biggest dilemma, period. But the one thing that he does have, certainly over a guy like Wembanyama, and again, throughout that series, it was a lot more Hartline guarding Wembanyama than Hartenstein guarding Wembanyama than it was Chet Holmgren. But the one thing he does have is he's a bigger, stronger body, so at least he can lean on him like Hartenstein could to some degree.
Yeah, and the other thing with Cat, you got to watch out that he doesn't get frustrated. Sometimes he will put his head down and pick up the worst charges where he just plows.
He can't afford those fouls.
Hey, last thing.
Those are what we call the PJ Hall fouls. You can't afford those fouls because you're going to use up some fouls guarding Wembanyama just in the normal course of defense.
Hey, last thing, you were talking about Rick Adelman.
Yeah.
Did Tim Donaghy cost Rick Adelman a ring when he was with Sacramento? Think about it. Sacramento against that Laker team.
You mean the officiation question of the entire series and whether it was thrown or not?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That King squad might have had a really good shot to win it all.
They did. They did have a good shot, and there certainly was some questionable officiating. But now, like, it's funny because the other day I saw somebody post that, and they put up Kobe Bryant being guarded by Jason Kidd, and they show it, and they act like, here's the evidence. Okay, there may be evidence, but that's not what you put up. What they put up was a clear foul on Sacramento, without question, a foul. He was holding Kobe Bryant with both arms in a bear hug, and then Kobe Bryant pushed off. Yeah, what do you think he was going to do? So, you know, I don't know. Can these things stand up to critical review? You know, look, I certainly remember it, and I watched it, and I thought it was suspect and questionable at the time. But I think you'd have to go back and reexamine the entire thing, sort of, play-by-play, and see what the truth of that was. But, yeah, perhaps yes, they did.
Yeah. Anyway, have a good time off, and hopefully we get a good finals to talk about.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jason. Okay. We'll take a quick break. One segment to go. We have 8 quarterbacks to go. Is that right? I don't know, Ramon. It's going to be tough. We'll be back.
Gilstrap Roofing's experienced team specializes in shingle and flat roofs for residential, commercial,
left to discuss. I don't know if we have time to discuss 8, but let's give it a shot.
Okay, number 8 is Trinidad Chambliss in Mississippi.
I think he would have been a round 2 pick had he come out this year. I think he's a lot like Russell Wilson. He has a live arm. He's super athletic. He's actually bigger than Russell Wilson. And I think there's a lot to work with there. Now, he also hasn't played much football, and I think it really benefits him that he comes back and plays another year. I don't know how it all goes for him. We'll see. But he's a unique player. He's really physically gifted, and there's a lot to like. He has a chance to be a round 1 draft pick. It's what he does from a productivity standpoint. And I wondered why he came back, why he did what he did, especially in a quarterback draft that was so shallow as the last one. I thought at worst he was a round 2 draft pick. I think the answer is he's a smart young man, and I think he knew that he really just hasn't played enough major college football. And I think he felt that he could benefit, get paid and benefit from the additional sort of on-the-job training. So he's back. I think he'll be very good. I think Ole Miss will be pretty good. You know, Pete Golding may be a vile character, but he's smart. Really smart, and he's a brilliant defensive mind.
Number 7 is John Mateer at Oklahoma.
Yeah, I think Mateer is a big bounce back year. Now, just to be clear, from an NFL standpoint, Messemaker has it all over Mateer. So that's why I think Drew Messemaker is the guy I would revise. I would move him well up this list. I think Mateer is a big bounce back year, though. I think year 1 at Oklahoma was rough at times. He didn't get any help at all. I think he felt like too much was on him, and he had to take some chances, and he really did. He had to take some chances. I don't think he'll need to take so many chances this year. I think his supporting cast is going to be better. I think his comfort level is going to go up, and I think you're going to see the guy that people sort of expected to see this year.
6 is Josh Hoover at Indiana.
ESPN just made Josh Hoover the number 1 player on their new player rankings. That list actually isn't by them, and it's not a very good list, but I meant to talk about that today. We didn't get to it. We'll talk about that when I come back. But Hoover has a live arm. He has an NFL arm without question. And now he's going to inherit some riches. Like Mendoza, his world is going to get dramatically better at Indiana. He's going to have an elite offensive line. He's going to have talent at running back, not the same 2 guys they had last year. They're gone, but that doesn't matter because they brought in talent. They already have 2 other legit backs, and they brought in Turbo Richards. I really like Turbo Richards. I think he's a lot like the 2 backs they had last year. I mean, he's a lot like Black. I mean, he runs. He's short. But he's physical. He's thick. And he runs hard. He runs violently. I thought he was Boston College's best player. And I think now he's going to be Indiana's best player, and he's going to be the friend of Josh Hoover. But the big thing they have is they have 2 elite receivers in Becker and Marsh. Becker's going to be a round 1 pick. I think he goes top 15. And Marsh has a chance to be a round 1 pick, too. Marsh, I thought I thought the two top receivers, as I've said repeatedly in the transfer portal all along, were Cam Coleman, who went to Texas, and Nick Marsh, who went to Indiana. So that's what Hoover's going to inherit. He's going to inherit Becker and Marsh. Becker is 6'4 and runs a legit 4.440. I see these people who write about Becker, and they make it sound like he's a possession receiver. No, no. He's a catch point warrior at 6'4". He's hyper competitive in the air, but he is a legit 4.4 guy. Becker can run. He's an outside receiver who can take the top off. I think the Becker-Marsh combination with Hoover is going to be really, really good. I think Indiana's going to be really, really good again.
Number five is Jaden Maiva.
Yeah, look, USC. I think Maiva is just a gunslinger. I think I think he's a potential round one pick, depending on what he does this year. There is no pass that he doesn't think he can make. He is more than willing to throw the ball into congestion and traffic because he believes in his talent and his arm. I don't think that's a bad trait. I think at Clemson, Deshaun Watson had that trait. Does it lead to some interceptions? Yeah. But I think that's who he legitimately is. Now, the receiving core, look, they landed NC State's best receiver in Anderson. That'll help. But the receiving core is not what it was a year ago. They lost key pieces, including crazy Mekhi Lyman. So that's the part of the equation I wonder about. But again, if I was doing this over, I would have Mestemaker higher than any of these guys. I would have Mestemaker above all these guys. He's the guy I would just move up. I wrote about this several weeks ago on Twitter. I just would move him up. I'd move him up against above every guy that we've mentioned since 9.
Okay, 4 is Julian Sayin at Ohio State.
In fact, we might want to amend that. Make some sort of swap there.
4 is Julian Sayin at Ohio State.
She just ignores that. Okay, so what Sayin has is the best receiver in college football and the best incoming receiver in college football, not to mention the other receivers that are already on the roster. They're like nothing but 5-star receivers. Julian Sayin is going to throw to nothing but 5-star receivers. That helps make a quarterback better. Pretty obviously. And Julian Sayin doesn't need much help. He's probably 6'2", and he has an adequate arm to make all the throws a college quarterback needs to make, an NFL quarterback needs to make. He throws with accuracy. He throws with touch. He layers the ball. I thought he was really good last year. I mean, I did not think Ohio State was going to win it because I just did not think he had the Will Howard experience. Now he does. So now I think he becomes more dangerous, not less dangerous. My worries about Ohio State don't relate to Sayin. It relates to the Ohio State Buckeye defense, which I think lost irreplaceable players, even for Ohio State. I think the level of athleticism that Ohio State lost on that defense, I just think that changes the equation of who they are. Even for a team that with as rich in talent and recruiting as Ohio State is, I don't think you can afford to lose players of the ability that they lost. I think you lost the two most athletic linebackers in America. You lost the safety in Downs, who was the brains of the whole operation. You lost the best run-stuffing defensive tackle in America. That's a whole lot of strength right up the middle that I just think it's going to be hard for them to replace. But as far as Sayin, which is what this list is about, Sayin completed 76% of his throws last year. There's no real reason to think that it's going to be any different this year. Now, they might take more vertical shots with a little more confidence in him, but he's going to be really good, and he's another guy. He's being left out of the discussion, but he's another potential round one NFL quarterback based on what he does this year. And like I said, there's not anybody in America who's throwing to a better overall group of receivers than this guy is. I just think that that almost guarantees his success level. He's going to be really, really good again. And now he has the experience to perhaps deliver another title to Ohio State. As long as they find answers defensively, which I think is that's still the major issue. So we'll see if he can overcome that.
Three is Darian Mensa at Miami.
Yeah. I have seen the craziest stuff on Darian Mensa. Like on the ESPN list, he was 4 or 5. I've seen him discussed as a round 3 NFL quarterback. I have no idea what these people are watching. Darian Mensa is a round 1 quarterback. He's going to go in the top 10 picks of the NFL draft as long as he doesn't get hurt. Mensa's been elite since the moment he stepped on a college football field. He can make all the throws an NFL quarterback needs to make. There's just nothing not to like. He has arm talent. He throws with touch. He can layer the ball. He's accurate. I don't know what would make anybody think that Mensah is going to be anything other than elite. Look, he's an upgrade on Carson Beck. He just is. He's that guy. And I think he's going to be in legitimate competition to be the top pick of the NFL draft. I don't have him 1 right now, but will I be shocked if he winds up being the number 1 overall pick? No, I won't. Because, again, I think he's a top 5 pick in the next NFL draft. So I don't buy this third-round stuff. I mean, these people had Beck as the number 1 overall pick at one point, and I never bought into that at all. Beck went exactly where he should have gone, and they have it backwards with Mensa. Mensa is the better talent. And so, and plus, he's going to have weapons to throw to. You know, the bringing over Bateman was a big deal. And obviously, in Tony, they have one of the nation's best receivers. And you can pretty much do anything you want with him. I think Mensa's going to have a really big year for Miami. If that offensive line holds up, and, you know, given that that's Cristobal's area of expertise and given the talent level they have, even though they're having to replace a lot of parts, I don't know how he can be anything but elite.
Okay, number 2 is Dante Moore, Oregon. Oregon.
Yeah, Oregon. That's still one of the funniest things ever. That dude who came out to Twin Peaks that time who wanted to tell me how to say, came all the way out to tell me how to correctly say Oregon. And I was like,
yeah.
You know, I was like, you got 2 seconds to live. Get out of my face. I was like, stop. All right. So Moore. Moore is, again, it's a chance to be the number 1 pick in the draft. I was surprised that with Moore as well, but Moore's going to have an enormous year at Oregon. I think he needs to get a little stronger, but he has a great arm, very live arm, one of the better arms in college football. He's athletic, but he's not a runner. He's a guy who's looking to sit in the pocket and throw the ball. And he was really good last year. I thought he'd be really good. I thought he had learned a lot sitting for the year that he did. You know, he came out of high school as a 5-star guy. He didn't play to that initially, but he played to it last year. And I think you're going to see nothing but more positives. They, again, have elite receivers at Oregon and one of the best young receivers in college football, and they get Evan Stewart back. So I just think he's going to be terrific.
And number 1 is Arch Manning.
I think there's a good chance Oregon wins the national title. I'm not there yet. But and Arch Manning, again, he has the pedigree. I think he had no help last year. He had no running game. His 2 alleged top running backs averaged like 3.5 yards a carry. His best receiver, Wingo, didn't play to that level. I thought he had almost no help. The offensive line did not play up either. He starts his career in his first start of last year. He started a couple games before that, but it's at Ohio State, and they had a chance to win that game. They're down at the goal line twice. Now they bring in Cam Coleman. They bring in Hollywood from NC State. I think they have an elite backfield now. I think they have an elite receiving core now. And we'll see about tight end, but I think the offensive line is going to be better. So Arch Manning, I think, matured a lot over last year. He got way better the second half of last year, and I think he's going to be the number 1 pick of the next NFL draft. I think the Manning name and what you'll see from him this year will prove out why. He's 6'4", he's athletic, he can run. He gives you that ability as well. I think you'll see him do some of that this year. That's why he's number 1 overall. All right, I'm done. I'm off until next Monday. I'll see you all then.
WCCP-FM 105.5, Clemson, Greenville, Anderson. WAHT AM 1560, Cowpens. 97.5, Spartanburg. We are the Roar.